Over the past 4+ months, police organizations in Portland have been literally pouring hazardous waste into the city through tear gas, pepper balls, and other toxic munitions. We sat down with friendly expert Dr. Juniper Simonis to try to get a grasp on the effects this unprecedented and abject refusal to respect life in the city of Portland will have on its residents.
My name is Dr. Juniper L. Simonis. I use they-them pronouns, and I am the owner and founder and lead scientist of Dapper Stats, a local ecological quantitative conservation consulting company. I know that before I even finish the word hexachloroethane, most people's eyes just glaze over, understandably so. Chemistry's a long way back in a lot of people's histories, if they even took a chemistry class. And that's actually, I think, one of the insidious things about chemical weapons is a lot of them are named these, like, ridiculously long names. And so they have these short abbreviations like CS or OC. But the actual, like, name of the thing is really kind of ridiculous, and people don't it doesn't stick in their brain. And so we tend to refer to these as HC grenades or HC smoke. The particular thing to note about HC is that the purpose of this is, like, the chemical reaction is to create a munitions-style smoke that you can deploy in different places to provide smoke screens for, like, battleships and whatever. And what comes out of an HC can isn't HC. HC is what goes into the can. What comes out of the can is zinc chloride gas. And so that's the, you know, when we think about the ecological or human health consequences of using HC, we really need to think about, in particular, the impacts of the product, which is predominantly, like, over 3/4 zinc chloride gas. And this is gas in a, like, a true sense, like, it's gaseous zinc chloride. Zinc chloride in gaseous form presents two sets of problems to human health. One of them associated with the zinc, and one of them associated with the chloride. So on the chloride side of things, what happens is that the chloride ions in the air actually end up making gaseous hydrogen chloride, which is like an acid. It's like HCl, but it's in gaseous form. And so the gas is actually acidic, and it causes dermal issues. It causes basically any epithelial cells that it comes in contact with, it will burn. And so that includes your skin, your ears, inside your ear canals. People have reported that inside your nose and your mouth and your lungs and your brachial epithelial cells, as well as your esophageal, like your into your stomach system, like epithelial cells, everything that's sort of exposed to the environment around it. When you have this level of chlorine coming in, or chloride ions coming in, it actually burns the cells and kills them. And we saw this in people in Portland that were exposed that had novel skin rashes compared to anything else that they had experienced before with any of the other gases. And so the chloride is, like, particularly gnarly because it destroys cells that it comes in contact with. It's very aggressive in that way. Now, the zinc, on the other hand, zinc is a very, very noxious and deadly gas. It induces what's known as metal fume fever in anybody that works in a space that creates metal fumes, in particular zinc fumes. I happened to be at a hardware store getting materials for doing some science and was talking to a gentleman who was working there. And when I mentioned that I was dealing with zinc chloride gas, the look of utter terror on his face is still etched in my brain right now. He was like, "I used to be a welder. We are taught from day one in welding to stay away from things that are associated with zinc, because that's a heavy metal that you can end up inhaling and it can kill you." And that's true. So zinc and heavy metal poisoning in general can cause a whole bunch of different symptoms depending on where it gets into your body. And this is where the combination of the zinc and the chloride are bad, because the chloride burns things and creates openings for zinc to get into your body. But in general, you tend to ingest or inhale the zinc. If you ingest it, that's where you get a lot of the pretty immediate response of vomiting that a lot of people had. But you can also get delayed responses of vomiting. Symptoms with metal fume fever and zinc poisoning roll out over the course of multiple days. So not all of the symptoms appear right away. And it depends on the person. There's not like a standard course of symptomology, because it depends on where it gets into your body. And if it gets into your lungs, then it goes into your bloodstream differently than if it gets into your stomach, right? And so where it ends up in your body is gonna depend on how it got into your body. And it can impact a whole lot of things because your body is basically trying to clear a toxin. And it will accumulate, but your body can clear it, just not as quickly as it accumulates. And so, from the literature that I've read on the kind of human toxicology around zinc poisoning, is that there is often a ramp up and then a ramp down sort of the symptoms. The ramp up coming with it getting into your body and mobilizing to a spot where the symptoms start to show up. Like it gets into your brain and you get, you have, or you, it impacts oxygenation to your brain and you have difficulties with memory, or it, it impacts your weight loss or whatever. Like there are all these different things that kind of happen over time because your body is trying to get this heavy metal out. The damage that's done to your body while it's working to clear it out, I am not an expert in understanding how much you can recover from that. I just know that your body can clear the zinc out eventually, but I don't know how long term the impacts of the symptoms that it's created maintain. That's something that's not really my expertise, but from what my friends are telling me, and people are telling me who were exposed to it and are still experiencing symptoms now, is that yes, those symptoms have continued into, months afterwards, now more than 2 months afterwards.
State and federal laws have strict regulations regarding hazardous waste, and of course, all of these chemicals we're discussing certainly qualify as hazardous waste. Are the local and state governments, as well as police organizations, complying with those regulations?
I 100% know that they are not complying with those regulations at any level, to be quite honest. At the very base level, the leadership doesn't even understand how to handle hazardous waste. They are clearly indicating that they do not understand how to manage hazardous waste, because all of that chemical material is hazardous, and those physical materials that have been in contact with the chemicals are hazardous. And so the only way for them to actually process hazardous waste properly is to collect that in, like that all of that residue off of the ground and take it away. And that's particularly relevant, important here, because they don't have the other option, which is watering it off. Legally, that's not allowed because of the types of hazardous waste that we're dealing with that are explicitly detrimental to aquatic ecosystems, and are explicitly regulated under clean water regulations are being put into the space like in a above a stormwater system that drains directly into a river. It's clear that they don't understand the life cycle of hazardous waste once it's put on the ground, and what it means to put chemicals in particular all over impervious surfaces like concrete. There's not even going to be like absorption into the ground. Stuff is just going to like get pushed by water and go into the aquatic ecosystem where it has the potential to have impacts for generations.
Last time we talked, you spoke about how the police brutality and these toxic chemicals are being used by police organizations to prove how little Black lives matter. And it's fascinating that all of these different bodies, from local governments to national, want us to know that they're willing to go to extreme lengths to show us how little Black lives matter to them.
Yeah, we are willing to salt the earth. They are like literally, and like literally with the hexachloroethane, like they're throwing zinc chloride. It's gaseous, but it loves water, and water is associated with it, right? So you end up getting chloride ions, like you would have in NaCl, right? But it's just ZnCl2, and so they're literally salting the earth when they use the HC stuff, and when they use CS, which has chlorines in it. And actually, when they use any of the other incendiary devices which have chlorates in it. So, yeah, basically, they are salting the earth anywhere they go. It's not just that they're using a chemical weapon in a way to disperse a crowd and then cleaning it up, right? Like, the police have this idea that chemical weapons are like regular trash, right? And so, the way the general populace in America, because we are so privileged, thinks about trash is that you put it out at the curb and it disappears. So in this particular instance, they think we throw the stuff out there and then maybe we pick up a can because we don't want the protesters to pick it up, and then everything else literally just disappears and like it's not a problem. But the issue is it is a problem, and then they turn it into this thing where they're like they are intentionally doing it like overboard. Because why not? And literally leaving it everywhere. And then the question comes, who's gonna clean it up? And the situation is that the legal responsibility financially for the cleanup of a hazardous waste is the producer of the hazardous waste. By producer, I mean like the one who is producing the waste in the environment, not I mean, the manufacturer is culpable too in other ways, but like the one who's like the police who are producing this environmental hazard, right? They're the ones who are culpable for cleaning it up financially. And so that money is some money that's going to have to come from somewhere at some point. Who's going to pay for that? The taxpayers, right? Because it's a government agency. The Portland police are going to need to get money from everybody to clean that up because they're the ones who are culpable for it. But in the meantime, the community of civilians is like putting up costs and things to put out time and clean stuff up and try and keep it from getting into the river. It's not, the onus is on the individuals impacted to show that there is an impact, and then it's on the regulatory agencies to hold the producer accountable. And in this particular instance, the regulatory agencies have explicit conflicts of interest because within Portland, we're talking about BES, the Bureau of Environmental Services, who, at least when they create, like when this all of this is happening before, is overseen by Ted Wheeler, who's the mayor, who also oversees the Portland Police Bureau. So the regulatory agency and the producer are overseen by the same individual. That is also true at the state level, where Kate Brown oversees Oregon State Police and controls the board of the Department of Environmental Quality. And so I have witnessed and testified against during environmental and energy committee meeting of the House of Representatives in Oregon, the complete disregard for the impact of the chemical weapons on the environment and a complete like disavowing of any responsibilities for regulatory action. It is painful to me to see regulatory agencies like DEQ and BES abscond on their duties and responsibilities in the face of an environmental and human health catastrophe.
You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Juniper Simonis, Portland's resident scientist and expert on police munitions, among other things. Find more of their work at dapperstats.com.